You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. Join me as we uncover the rich histories of North America's Great Plains, exploring the latest archaeological discoveries and past cultures that shape this storied region. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to episode 36. Are we on 36? I think we're on episode 36. Yeah, the 36th of the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. I am your host, Professor Carlton Shieldchief Grover, and I am so excited to have you as you join me on this journey through the rich and fascinating history of North America's Great Plains. So it's been like 2 months since I've recorded, right? The last two episodes, episode 35 with Dave Williams and episode 34 with Spencer Pelton, Dr. Spencer Pelton, I recorded back in November. I'm an idiot, but like, Ashley and Chris, two of the three co-producers of the APN and who do much of the legwork for the Archaeology Podcast Network, like they let everyone know we're going on a break over Christmas. I read the email or the message in Slack and didn't comprehend it. So I thought they would come out in December. They politely reminded me that they to let me know that we would be taking a break and that my episodes will come out in January. But to be fair, I thought I had messed up. So I reached out to them and I was like, hey, like, I got these in November. Like, why are they not coming out? And they're like, hey, idiot, we told you we're going on a break. And if you wanted these out in December, to let us know. And I was like, that is valid. I apologize for not doing my due diligence. So, and I apologize to you, audience, that I didn't let you know that the December episodes were their promos. One was of Dr. Andrew Kikilla, and the other was in my trowel. Oh, Tilly and Ash. That's right. The Brits, our my British colleagues in the British Isles talked about stuff. So anyways, I apologize for not letting you guys know that the Christmas Eve and January 7th episodes were going to be promos. So I actually haven't recorded since November, so I'm a little rusty. I am getting more tippos and folks on with the show. I'm trying to get Connor, my co-host Connor John, and back on the podcast, but like he hung up his mic for good, it seems like, after ruins. But I'll try to get him on. I have some other people lined up. We'll be back to our regular scheduled programming. But today, my dear audience, I'm jazzed. I'm happy to be here. I am teaching right now my undergraduate version of Great Plains Archaeology. So this is the second time I taught it. It was the first class I taught at KU. It is ANTH 318. I got the title changed as Indigenous Archaeologies and Histories of the Great Plains. It is part of the Core 34 curriculum at the University of Kansas. So it is part of these classes that students have to take. They have certain credits they have to fulfill in order to move on with their degree. And so I'm sorry for the big deep breaths. I'm really excited to be here. And as I think you guys can tell from the past couple episodes, my breathing has gotten better. I'm very happy to say that I have quit smoking as and quit vaping as of August. And I've also lost 40 pounds. I had like a come to life, like a come to Jesus moment in the fall about my health. And some big decisions were made. And so I've lost over 40 pounds. I quit smoking. I quit drinking. I am living a much healthier lifestyle. I am much happier. And I've also, like, when I listen to my own episodes, I can hear myself, especially, I was pushing like 280, guys. Like, I was the fattest I had ever been and had been maintaining a very large weight since being at Indiana. And I was at risk of type 2 diabetes. And this is nothing to do with Great Plains Archaeology, but this is to contextualize what's been going on in my life. But anyways, much healthier, feeling much better, teaching a class I've taught before. It's doing really well. This Core 34 class satisfies a world cultures credit. So out of the 25 undergrads I have in my class, only three are anthro majors. The rest are non-anthros. And so like I'm actually having a lot of fun teaching this junior level Great Plains Archaeology and Ethnography course. And it's also kind of like an intro to archaeology at the same time. And so I'm in a good mood. I taught today. I get to go to Oklahoma this weekend. I'm recording this February 12th. And so like I'm just in a good mood. And so today I want to share that good mood with you guys. I don't know how long this episode is going to be. It's going to be a little short, I think. But I wanted to talk a lot about hoaxes and frauds in archaeology, specific to the archaeological record, not like other types of frauds, like not like a person or anything like that. Because today we were talking about in class, as we were wrapping up this unit on the Paleo-Indian period, we stopped to talk about like, are Clovis people, Clovis-equipped people related to you know, the ancestors of the indigenous people of North America. So we talked about, of course, Anzac One, Anzac Child, which I believe we talked about on this podcast and how it showed relationships with indigenous people of North America, more so genetic similarities to Central and South America. But there's a whole data set issue when it comes to the availability of ADNA data from North American Indian populations. So we talked about the forced sterilizations in the 1970s of American Indian women. And also in the concept of talking about the Folsom discovery with George McJunkin, and these ideas about the archaeological record and how long Native people had been in the Americas. We talked about it. So when I was eating dinner and wrapping up today, I was like thinking, what can I talk about with the podcast that would just kind of be fun, a little different? And so I was like, well, let's talk about like myths and frauds. And I know that's very much more of like Ken Killa's thing. So he might have already covered some of these topics. In fact, I bet he did. But like just starting with one of the first ones that we talked about today was the mound builder myth, right? And just a reminder, or maybe new information for you, your audience, you know, we know in the eastern part of the United States were mound cultures. These were groups of people that constructed primarily large earthen mounds as burial mounds. And then when we think about the Mississippians or the Hopewell, these mound societies or mound cultures that made like Serpent Mounds or Moundville or Cahokia, where they made platform mounds for monumental architecture as well as ceremonial use beyond the spherical burial mounds. So as Euro-Americans are settling on the East Coast and coming across these, they're, you know, looting them, excavating them, and they could not believe that the indigenous North Americans, like thinking like Cherokee, for example, or the Haudenosaunee folks on the East Coast, they're like, well, this is far too sophisticated for indigenous populations in North America. It could not possibly have been them. And once again, these are just mounds of dirt. Like it is just filling baskets with dirt and making a pile of dirt, a rather large pile. There was time and energy expended in creation of these, but still people believe that this was far beyond this. This was, you know, beyond the engineering prowess of the American Indian. And so they hypothesized that before there were American Indian people in North America, there must have been an ancient race of white people, of Europeans who were the first inhabitants of this land, who built such sophisticated works of engineering, these piles of dirt. And that since that we can't find any of these ancient white people here, the ancestors of the American Indian must have wiped them all out. And so us wiping them out and moving them out of these territories isn't a bad thing because they wiped out the waste right people. And it is a bizarre argument, but it justifies termination policies and practices that were going on in genocide and relocation of American Indian peoples. So they're very much intertwined, right? There was like no evidence of an ancient white race. It was just this ridiculous hypothesis. And like part of this argument was debunked by, we definitely talked about the Moundville stuff on A Life in Ruins, by excavations conducted by like Thomas Jefferson and his enslaved people, his captives. They did systematic excavations of a mound at Mount Acello. And like they could look through the stratigraphic profile of the mound and see the layers within that would directly connect the outer layers of the more recently interred material, which did have like trade beads and like European goods in and showed relationship with the things inside. So like it was very, very clear to Thomas Jefferson and his enslaved captives workers that, yeah, the people that built these mounds are definitely American Indian, like without a doubt. But this was something that did indeed persist well beyond when it should. And this culminated, you know, fundamentally how long American Indians had been here. You know, up until radiocarbon dating, which wasn't until like the 1950s, really wasn't solidified until the 1920s with the discovery of the Folsom Point, the Folsom projectile point, with that in situ photograph of that projectile point being in between two Bison antiquus ribs, right? Like solidifying that people had been here as old as the Ice Age. Because in France, since like the 1830s, I want to say, or 1840s, they were discovering like upper Paleolithic stone tools with extinct Pleistocene megafauna. Like it was pretty well secure at the time in the mid 19th century that humans had been around in Europe for at least the Ice Age, but they hadn't found that evidence quite yet. In North America, they did find, we've talked about the 12 Mile Creek point, right? Like technically we found what we believe to be a Folsom point. Well, definitely a Paleo-Indian projectile point, if not Folsom, was found in situ with extinct bison out near 12 Mile Creek in Kansas, but the point was lost. But we have the glass plates and photographs of the plate of the point, and looks awfully Folsom-y to me, but a colleague of mine said it's not Folsom, but it definitely Paleo-Indian. It was found with an extinct form of bison. They're on display at KU, Bison Antiquis. And so, you know, KU lost out on that. If that point hadn't gone missing during a fundraiser, it'd be known as the 12 Mile Creek Point. But anyways, there's an excellent publication by Matt Hill out of Iowa on this. And I believe we talked about this early on in the podcast. Like, I think it's been, how long have we been doing this podcast for? Has it been, I almost said dear students, because I still have teacher brain right now. I'm going to check real quick. Bear with me. Has it been a year? Oh my God. It's been over a year. The first episode came out in August of 2024. So yeah, we've been on air for like a year and a half, everybody. Yay us. Thank you guys for following. I know I'm really bad at responding to emails, but I do read them and I do appreciate them. And I do love the feedback. So I appreciate like the four of you that listen. Mike, if you're listening, glad to have you in class. Really excited you're in there. Cool. So myth one, mound builder myth, ancient race of white people built them. No, excavations as early as late 1700s very much showed a stratigraphic cultural continuity between the inner layers of these mounds with older like mound building cultures with contemporary groups. So when we get back from break, we're going to switch. We're going to go from mounds and we're going to talk about rune stones. Okay. So I'm really excited to talk about this next hoax, these two next hoaxes in archaeology. So we'll be right back after these messages. Okay. And we're back to episode 36 of the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. I'm your host, still Professor Shield Chief Cover. Two next hoaxes. You may have heard about these, right? One of them is the Kensington rune stone. And then there is the Havener runestone. So for context, there's a whole thing on the History Channel about Kensington. So the Kensington runestone, we're a little bit outside the plains with Kensington, but we're close. We're in Minnesota. Widely believed to be a 19th century hoax, not a 14th century artifact. So the Kensington runestone was discovered in Minnesota, so just outside the plains, right? So it's, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, part of the Great Plains, Minnesota, like maybe Western Minnesota could be considered. It's definitely prairie, but not part of the Great Plains. Kensington runestone found in Minnesota in 1898 by Swedish immigrant Olaf Ullman, and it was alleged to have been found on his farm and have Viking runes on it. And that it was left by Vikings in North America in the 14th century. And so it was part of this Vikings got to Minnesota type of deal. That's a very big claim that requires extraordinary evidence. Now, widely believed to be a hoax. And the reason being, there's some pretty key debunking evidence here. So one is the anomalies of the runes, right? That like other languages, the language changed over time, even the written form of language, right? Like 19th century English in America, written English is different from 21st century written English. And so there are key differences. So in this runestone, mind you, who found this was a Swedish immigrant, and Minnesota is known for Scandinavian immigrants, right? There are 19th century Swedish words and grammatical structures present in this runestone that are unknown to have existed in the 1300s, right? Mind you, found by a Swedish immigrant in the 19th century, late 19th century, and we're finding like 19th century Swedish shit in there? Weird. There is a book on runes that was written, it's called The Well-Informed Schoolmaster by Carl Rosender, was found, it contained similar runes, and was found in the owner's possession. So like in Olaf's possession was this book, which contained Nordic runes. similar runes. And like contextually, like a 13th century expedition of Vikings dying in Minnesota and like carving this runic stone and like burying it for people to find later, it's just like way too convenient of evidence and inconsistent with what is known both archaeologically and historically about Viking expeditions to North America, right? Like we know they got to Nova Scotia. There's no denying that there were some Viking expeditions that got to the East Coast of North America, the Northeast Point, you know, mostly in Canada. Minnesota is a little wild, right? Like that's going down the Hudson River, the St. Lawrence River, whatever, you know, whatever that river is that separates much of Eastern Canada with the United States and into the Great Lakes. And that's just a lot going on. So it's believed to have been a forgery for its time. Now, that being said, like an archaeologist by the name of Larry Zimmerman, he believes it to be a hoax. I'm going to pull up his publication. Cat did a lot of work. And so he has a publication. Larry taught at Indiana University, Purdue University, IUPUI out of Indianapolis. And so he has like a draft report of handling pseudo-archaeology claims about the past. And also, I believe he has a YouTube video, yes, from the Oklahoma Public Archaeology Network, where he talks about fringe archaeology. I'll put a link in the show notes where you can watch that. Larry's a cool cat. He talks about Kensington, it being a total fraud. That being said, there is an archaeologist, Alice Kehoe, who believes that archaeologically, the Kensington runestone is legit. And so she wrote a book about it, I believe. Yeah, the Kensington runestone, approaching a research question holistically. And so one of the big parts of that is that she concludes that the stone's authenticity should not be dismissed as readily as been so far. So like, I believe she backs it up. She recently, and what spurred me to think about this is she was posting this on Facebook not too long ago. The SAA's posted about it. I'm going to pull it up now. Alice was not happy. And Alice is, these are both wonderful people, and I'm not disagreeing or taking sides. Like, I believe it to be a hoax, like, based on what I understand about the runestone. I mean, Larry and Alice have looked into it, and Alice believes it to be legit. So, yeah, Alice has this post about the SAA Archaeological Record in November 2025, published her expose. And, you know, she says it published her expose of the claim that the Kensington runestone is a hoax, and saying that my research showing the high likelihood that the inscription from 1932 in Minnesota is authentic from a Norse fur trading expedition stimulated by events in Scandinavia after the Black Death. So like Alice believes it's legit. Larry does not. This is all happening around like the same time. Like I saw Larry gave a presentation to a group I was meeting with, the Amarin Seminar in Arizona. And he had brought this up, and I was like, what is going on with this runestone? So like, I know the title of this episode, like clearly I'm biased. I think this is a hoax. This sounds ridiculous, because more importantly, I haven't read Alice's book. Indigenous nations from Minnesota and these areas do not acknowledge ever the existence of Vikings or Europeans getting to Minnesota. Like that's in no one's oral traditions from that neck of the woods. So like that in Native history world, there's no record of it. And you know, the absence of evidence is not evidence for absence. I want to be clear. Like maybe all the people that knew that story died from smallpox, and that was a lost piece of history. But something to keep in mind. Alleged Viking runestone found in an area populated by Scandinavian immigrants. Runestone book found in possession of the guy that allegedly found it that has similar runes. There is, you know, there's 19th century Swedish and grammatical structure present. Once again, Swedish immigrant found this. Like there's a lot of information that surrounds this that's like, this doesn't look to be legit. The other one that I wanted to chat about, where is it? There's another runestone. There exists another, as Yoda would say, is the Havener runestone. This was found in eastern Oklahoma that is 12 feet tall and a 3-ton sandstone slab. This one suggests that Vikings explored Oklahoma between 600 and 800 AD, so earlier than Kensington. they would have sailed along the Gulf of America, up the Mississippi River, and to the Red River, I guess. The runestone discovered in 1830s. The runes were interpreted by Gloria Farley as Nomadal or Glom's Valley, suggesting a Norse boundary marker. Once again, the grammar and structure of the runes don't match Old Norse grammar. And once again, suggests based on the grammar and runes that they were carved by 19th century Scandinavian settlers to that region. Yeah, like Oklahoma was also settled by Scandinavian folks, part of the Boomer Sooner Rush. And like there are more runestones that are found across Oklahoma. It is like wild. There's zero archaeological evidence for any of this, right? Like when DeSoto and Cortez and the Spanish explorers wandered all around the Southeast and Southwest, we can find evidence of them interacting with local folks through European goods, stuff broke. We can track where they traveled. There is no evidence beyond like Nova Scotia and Eastern Canada for Viking movement or Scandinavian movement across North America, especially Oklahoma or Minnesota. And so wild, definitely hoaxes. Like that's, it's just bizarre. Like there's a park around the Havener runestone, like, and you know, part of this, right, is it does, and why I brought up the Moundville thing, like having these stories about earlier Europeans present is also a land claim, right? Those are Scandinavian immigrants saying, well, our ancestors were also here hundreds of years ago. Like we also belong here. Like these are Scandinavian immigrants staking a claim and planting their flag and suggesting they're not the first arrivals. And therefore they have a more legitimate claim than others to that area because their ancestors had also been present. So that's what's going on there. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Vikings in North America, definitely Nova Scotia. Not west of that. It is wild. If you don't, like, send me an email if you think elsewise, but like, or other hoaxes in the Great Plains that you think we should talk about. Happy to hear them. Mound builder myth, definitely busted. We know that. Sucks about 12 Mile Creek. Wish KU could have published it. I am not sure what the next episode is going to be about, but we'll see. I will check you all later for episode 37. You guys have a good time. Be safe. Make good decisions. Don't do drugs. Dr. Carlton Schill, Chief Cover, and I will catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at Pawnee_archaeologist, and you can also email me at greatplainsarcpodcast@gmail.com. And remember, anybody can love the mountains, but it takes a soul to love the prairie. American author Willa Cather.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.archpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.